Hey there, Clean Comedy Podcast fans. Are you looking for a new adventure? Do you have an urge to learn more about the random things in life? Well, then look no further. The Foolish Wanderers Podcast is the podcast for you. Join in as co-hosts Katrina and Kendra foolishly guide you through some of life's mysteries and greatest moments. That's the Foolish Wanderers Podcast. Check it out. It's available wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James, and I'm here with my co-host, Danny.
Hey.
Danny, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. Getting in the Halloween-y spirit. I've got my Boba Fett hoodie that zips, wait for it, all the way up.
Does it zip all the way up? Oh, dude, that's awesome. Okay, I have a question about that because I don't know anything about those. Can you see through that?
Oh, yeah. Give me a number or something. This is a treat for the YouTube watchers. Number two.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Oh, I'm so excited right now. I can't even.
Yeah. So, again, this is if that's not a screaming advertisement to watch on YouTube, then I don't know what is. Sorry, yeah. Spotify listeners.
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of listeners all over the world, and we're growing every week, and numbers are going up, and I appreciate every single person who is listening to this. So if you're listening to this, just listening, please go over to YouTube. Please subscribe. Even if you don't want to watch the episode, please just subscribe. We use all the subscribers we need. We're trying to get to 1,000. We're at 510 last time I checked. 510, 511, something like that. So that's same as my height. But I'd like to get to 1,000, so we'd be as tall as Shaq. So let's do that. I don't know how tall Shaq is.
Curious what we look like.
Yeah. So I want to talk comedy because that's what this show is about. But there is a lot of things that happened recently in the comedy community. If most of you don't know, one of the great pioneers of comedy, Mort Saul, died. Now, he was not a clean comedian. He did, if you know Lenny Bruce or George Carlin, he was a groundbreaker like that. He spoke up for freedom of speech. Now, as a clean comedian, we don't normally go into blue comedy, and we don't usually use some words that maybe would get us in trouble. But however, there are topics that we talk about that do make people uncomfortable, right? Especially if you're a Christian comedian or a conservative type comedian, you may not side on one side of the political spectrum or the other. You may be on one side that upsets people, and they don't want you to do those jokes, right? I've heard, you know, some people say Christian comedians are the worst, queen comedians are stupid, whatever it is. I've seen and heard all those things, and I've even had people say queen comedians are not real comedians because you guys don't talk about real stuff. I'm like, we're talking about our family, our kids, our life, all the same stuff you are. I'm just not throwing in 18 F-bombs, and I'm not talking about my body parts. So, you know, but
body parts though, James, you should talk about them more.
I don't talk about my reproductive organs. How about that? That's probably the better
way to say it. Clean comedy podcast, folks.
Yeah. So in that vein, I am a student of comedy. I will listen and watch any comedy. I don't care. I learned something from bad comedy, right? There's tons of bad comedy. If you go to like YouTube or Reddit or anywhere on the internet and you look up like people's first sets are usually terrible. I know my first set was terrible. Like, if you go watch those, but there's something in there. There's always something to glean from it, right? Like, and I want to say this to everybody who goes on Reddit or YouTube and when you post your first open mic, and I want to say something to the people that just rip those people apart. Remember, you were new once too. Yes, I get that it's annoying that 80 brand new comedians are putting their first open mic on Reddit or YouTube or whatever free to watch, but give them a little support. Make it I think it's called a, oh great. Now I just went blank. It is it's the sandwich method of giving, was it like the constructive feedback sandwich?
Yeah. A crap sandwich, basically, you know, stuff. Crap goes in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. So you say something nice, then you say something constructive, at least. It shouldn't be destructive. You should constructive, and then something else nice. Because you might be like, "Hey, you have great stage presence. You have no punchlines, but maybe if you rework this thing a little bit, you could have a punchline here, 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 and here." Also, I liked your shirt. Boom. There you go. That's all you have to do. Don't be like, why are you posting this? You suck. No one wants to listen to you. Your jokes are retarded. Like, whatever. Stuff. People write this stuff on Reddit and YouTube all the time. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, yeah. And then they're like, the comedy community sucks. And it's like, yeah, because of people like you. Like, you're being toxic. Don't be toxic.
Yeah, the internet is famously a place for constructive criticism and civil discourse. Yeah, it's like we always talk about, though. Comedy is subjective, right? So even, you know, that person posting, like, you'll never know unless you post it, you know? I mean, Michael Jordan or some people, I think, even credit it to Wayne Gretzky, right? They say you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Who did actually say it? I thought it was Gretzky.
Jordan. You thought Gretzky? I thought Jordan. I mean, I'll Google it.
Gretzky played before Jordan did, though, right? He played before Jordan started playing?
They were both late 80s, I thought, at least from a professional standpoint, right? But yeah, right? But no, I mean, it's subjective, right? So even if, you know, for example, I post something and a bunch of people don't like it, it's like, well, at the same time, there may be other people that actually really do like it. And, you know, even when I become quote-unquote professional, right? It's like, yeah, well, there's still going to be a lot of people that think you're terrible. And there's going to be a lot of people that, you know, think you're great. I don't know. It's always going to be a mixed bag. But yeah.
Well, and that's the truth, because like there's like Bill Burr hate threads. There's Joe Rogan hate threads. There's Dave Chappelle hate threads. There's Louis C.K. I mean, it doesn't matter what comedian it is. Somebody hates them. I mean, I just read a thing the other day, and I want to interview him, by the way, Bobcat Goldthwait. If you remember, like, like that guy from Police Academy, which I grew up watching and loving, by the way, I thought like was one of the funniest dudes ever, has beef with Jerry Seinfeld. So it's like, okay, like, yeah, that's insane to me. Like, those two guys should be, I would think, would be friends, but they're not. And Bobcat, if you're listening to this or anyone knows him, I would love to have him. He doesn't have to do the voice. I know that it's a voice. I did not know that when I was a kid. I assumed that he always talked like that. And I would do that at my house. I obviously didn't do a great impression, so I do apologize. Okay. If I went back and watched Police Academy for about 20 minutes, I'm sure I'd come back with a much better one. I should do that. I should like pause this at some point, go watch something, and then come back and do it. Anyways, so everybody had – I mean, I get it. Not everyone is everyone's cup of tea. The Blue Collar Comedy Tour is not going to sell out in Los Angeles. It's not. Right?
Yeah.
You might be a redneck, not going to hit in LA. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. If you would ignore the Blue Collar Comedy Tour in LA, you might not be a redneck.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, now, if someone came out with, you might be a hipster, that would probably kill in LA, right? That might work. You know?
Could be. Yeah.
So, you know, just stuff like that. So that's one thing that I noticed this week. The second thing that I thought was awesome, as we're on the topic of freedom of speech, is there was a story that I read that I've kind of been watching a little bit about a comedian in Canada who had made fun of a special needs kid and then got sued by the family.
Oh.
And basically got fined all this money because they said it was hate speech. And he's now, it's Canada, so it's not American, so it's a little bit different. Yeah. And he went through the whole process, and then it went to their Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court ruled in the favor of the comedian, saying that it's free speech, that, you know, it was a joke, it was in context of this, like...
Terrible joke, maybe.
Yeah. Definitely a terrible joke. I've seen it, and I've seen it, like, transcribed. It was a terrible joke, but it was also, like, I think it was, like, 10 years ago, where it was, like, a different kind of thing, where, like, you could get away with saying some of the words that he said. Like, even now, even though we say freedom of speech, there are certain words that, like... Me as a white comedian can't go on stage and say the N-word like 50 times. I can't even say it once, let's be honest. But
I mean, yeah, I felt icky when you were, you know, quoting internet trolls and saying the R-word. I was like,
yeah, I know, I felt bad. Also, I'm sorry, guys.
I know you're playing playing the role of internet jerk, but yeah, it's like they're just words where, and it's crazy, by the way, because you said 10 years ago, and I'm like, yo, that's still 2011, though. You know, like, did we really not know better in 2011? Like, that still feels... recent-ish, but yeah,
I knew people in 2009 still using the term gay for things that they didn't like or whatever, like that terminology. So that, I mean, it literally, it takes time for a word to kind of go out of vogue, some words go quick, right? Because we have the internet now. But 2009, yeah. The internet still wasn't as strong as it is now. It didn't have as much power. So that word was still used quite a bit to describe things that people didn't like or hated or annoyed them or whatever. I don't know how to use that word. Actually, I have no idea how that slang was used anymore because I don't remember. Anyways, so that was one thing. And I thought it was interesting because there were people on both sides of the fence that I watched talk about, like, oh, that's right, they should have stuck up for freedom of speech. And the other people were like, yes, but now he's learned. And the guy did learn a lesson. He did say, like, he would never do that joke again. He did apologize for it and all that stuff. But it was like one of those things where, like, yeah, how long is it going to last? Like, how – if you tell a joke that today is fine by today's standards, at what point does it not become okay?
Yeah, and then do you judge it by the current standards or by the standards of the time when it was presented? I definitely understand that argument and do have, I don't know if sympathy is the right word. I mean, empathy. But I get it. Yeah, right. I mean, it's tough, especially because sometimes those things change so fast, to your point, with the internet and being what it is. And, you know, there are a lot of terms that I try to, like, take out of my vocabulary that, you know, like saying, like, oh, that's crazy. Like, you know, even now I'm like, yeah, you know, because there are people where that word means something to them, makes them feel a certain kind of way. And, you know, what does it affect me? You know what I mean? Like, to not say that word. Oh, I didn't realize it affected you. Great. I'll stop saying it. That doesn't, like, I'm not going to die on the hill because I want to say something is crazy. Like, no, it hurts people. And that's, like, a relatively new thing for me. Great. I'll stop saying it. I'll say, whoa, that's wild. Oh, that's silly. You know, whatever it is. But
I love saying wild. Wild's my favorite version of that.
Yeah. And again, what's wrong with that? Great. It's a short switch and it's done. And I feel like there are some people that, you know, people like Seinfeld, right? Given he's obviously earned the right to maybe kind of want to plant his flag a little bit. But at the same time, like, there's some people that are very vocal about, like, no, like, oh, cancel culture has gone too far. And it's like, what do you care? You know, like, what? Like, oh, I can't say this word. So think of another word. Like, our job is to think of things outside the box that are funny and, you know, whatever. It's like, just use a different word. Like, I doubt it's going to change the meaning of your joke if you can't say, you know, one word versus its synonym. You know what I mean? I don't know. The whole thing is just, what do you care? You know, just say a different word.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, saying the word is, and I get both sides of the argument of saying, you know, hey, we should be able to say whatever we want. But at the same time, it's like, hey, also, you have to realize you're talking to other human beings that have feelings and thoughts and ideas. And when you present those things, they can have issues with them, right? So you're like, the word crazy. I didn't know that was it's a trigger for some people. I didn't realize that was a real thing. But okay, cool. Like, if someone said to me, hey, that word bothers me, I'm like, okay, cool. I apologize. I will not use that word. You know, I have friends that are trans that, I now find myself, someone will be like, we'll call them the wrong pronoun. And I'm like, no, it's, you know, and I'll correct people. And they're like, it's okay. Like, it's like, you don't need to do that for me. But I'm like, no, because you already said it. You know, like, I'm ready to, like, go to war over it. It's weird. I don't know.
I think most people, and obviously I can't speak for the trans community or for, you know, the mentally ill community or whatever it is. Like, I can't speak for them, obviously. Right. But I feel like a lot of times it's just like, hey, a little effort, a little recognition. Yeah. Like, that's all. Like, it's just, it's a want to feel seen in a way. A friend of mine, you know, is part of, you know, that community. They identify, their pronouns are they, them, they, them, their, you know. And at first it was sort of a shift, right? Because I knew them before, you know, those pronouns as a previous pronoun. And it's one of those things where, would they be upset with me if I slipped and used a different pronoun? Probably not, because they know my intent and my care, and they just see, like, hey, you're trying. Like, you know, if 9 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 or even 7 out of 10 times you're using my correct pronouns, I do appreciate that.
Right.
And, you know, I would have to think that if I use the wrong pronoun, I was like, oh, no, I'm sorry. Like, okay, now I kind of do look like a weirdo. I was like, no, it's fine. You know, like, I appreciate it. You're trying to meet me where I'm at, you know? And it's, again, it's, what do I care? It doesn't affect me, so great. Like, why not help somebody feel seen or help somebody not feel triggered or, whatever it may be, you know?
And that's the thing is comedy is all about words, right? What we say is what we say to make people laugh. Yep. And so when we say things that hurt as opposed to entertain, that's a different thing, right? That's, you're not being a comedian anymore. Now you're being, I don't know, but you're not being a comedian. That's not in the spirit of comedy, is saying things that can be hurtful or misconstrued or attacking somebody or attacking a group. That's what they call like punching up or punching down, right? Those two terms are used often.
Exactly.
But I had one more thing. What was the other last one? Oh, as I was talking about that, we had talked previously about different comedians and how they have changed comedy, right? And even today, we're getting comedians. Now, I'm not sure how familiar you are with Louis C.K. Are you pretty familiar with his work?
Yeah.
So he has said, as a white guy, to be fair, he's actually not white. He is actually part Latino. In case people don't know that, he is part actually Latino. But he, even with his red hair, or whatever, people always think he's white. But he has used the N-word in his act. And it's now, whether good, bad, otherwise, people allowed him to get away with it when he said it. I was very surprised that that was a thing. And I don't know. And there wasn't any backlash on that. As far as I know, I've looked around. I haven't seen very much backlash for that bit. It was more about the other things that he's done, obviously.
But, which obviously are terrible and screw that guy.
Right.
I think you see, you know, a lot of like digging up people that like would wear like blackface, you know?
Yes.
And again,
about that.
And it gets back to that conversation, right? Well, it was funny at the time and, oh, I was just pushing the envelope. And it's like people that like, I don't think had any kind of intent at the time, right? Jimmy Kimmel, right? When he did the Karl Malone bit and he wore blackface. I remember, you know, being younger and at the time and like seeing that and thinking it's hilarious. And at the time, you don't really think anything of it, right? But I think a lot of it comes down to how do you react once you realize you have hurt people, even if it is by a 15, 20 year old, whatever bit,
right?
You know, and that's where I think it's like, okay, somebody like Jimmy Kimmel, you know, he has clearly in the time since then made an effort and showed a certain kind of, contrition towards different folks, obviously, especially communities that are marginalized, so it's like, okay, go figure, he's somebody that you'd probably be willing to give a pass for, you know, versus somebody like, you know, we mentioned Louis C.K. and it's like, well, he did those terrible things. And like, I don't know, he wrote like an apology that take, you know, however sincere you feel it might've been. And then he just kind of disappeared for a while. And then it's like, okay, is that it? Like, I don't know. Like, and then he just started doing comedy again. It's like, oh, he's just going to do comedy again. Like, I don't know. It's a weird thing, you know, and I'm not like, what do we want from him? I don't know, but am I necessarily comfortable with him just being out there? And it's like, no, at the same time, you know, like I don't, again, it's not a thing where it's like, you got to check these three items. Sorry for an alarm there.
No, you're fine.
But yeah, it's a weird thing. I don't know. But,
so then that's the other thing is how do we separate the comedy from the comedian, right? At that point too, because Jimmy Kimmel, we know, is not a bad person, right? He's not a bad guy. He was doing a bit. He was doing a sketch or whatever. That doesn't make him a bad person for doing it. However, right, he was doing it for the sake of comedy. It's like in like Mel Brooks and in Blazing Saddles, I think that has the record for the most N-words in it, if I remember right. Yeah. But if you know the story behind that, it was originally written by him with the help of Richard Pryor, that was Richard Pryor's favorite word. Like,
that would explain the words.
Yeah. But because of the drug use and everything that Richard Pryor was doing at the time, he was considered a liability by the studio and therefore was not put in Blazing Saddles because he was supposed to be originally that character. Gotcha. So that thing's there. And then the other thing is like, I grew up on Bill Cosby. I love Bill Cosby bits. I love the chocolate cake bit. And when we have chocolate cake in my house, I do the chocolate cake bit. I separate myself from Bill Cosby the person and Bill Cosby's comedy because it's not the same thing. At least I try to. It's hard sometimes because I'm like, oh man, I know I shouldn't like this, but I grew up on this bit and it's hilarious. And chocolate cake doesn't hurt anybody, by the way, that bit, if you've ever heard it. It's not like Spanish Fly, where you could be like, whoa, that's a little dicey, right? Maybe that's...
Yeah. I think another big part of it is like, is the offending act part of their comedy bit, where they were just trying to push comedy in a certain way and be edgy or be, you know, whatever. Like, Sarah Silverman talks about this a lot. She obviously had a lot of, exactly. That's kind of her shtick, right? Jimmy Kimmel, kind of, you know, like we talked about. But then it's like, there are the other things where it's like, you know, the Cosbys and the Louis C.K.'s, where it's like, you weren't pushing comedy, you know, you had an act, an influential act, but then you were abusing people, you know, and that's outside of the act. And I'm obviously less willing to forgive that, because it's like, you can't even make an argument that it was, in the sake, you know, but it was comedy. It's like, well, no, that clearly wasn't. So for me, that's where it's, I can a little bit easier kind of separate the person from the act, where it's like, they just took the act a little too far. Their sense of humor was a little jaded. They were in a certain, you know, of the era, whatever it is.
So would you listen to a Bill Cosby bit today, or would you feel that that's not okay?
I probably just wouldn't have any interest. I don't think it would be like some type of like moral stand, or like, no, I would never. But it's like, yeah, he sucks. And I feel like if somebody, like if it was on, I'd just be like,
I don't know. It's clouded my way of listening to it, because I used to love it, right? I own every Bill Cosby album. It was like my jam. And like, it'd be like if Steve Martin came out and like people were saying like he does, I would cry. Like, it would break my heart. Like,
I never listen to a banjo again.
Right. Yeah. I know. And I loved his stand up and I watched all his stuff. Or Bob Newhart came out and something, or, you know, and also the other thing is, I heard recently like Eddie Murphy's trying to get back in stand up. Now, if you've ever seen Delirious, or what's the other one now? I keep forgetting. Delirious and
Raw, or is that?
Raw. Eddie Murphy Raw. But he has a lot of jokes that today you could never do, right?
Of course.
But I don't think he would come, and he's even apologized for those too, I believe. And that's very interesting. Now, here's the other thing. So there's Jimmy Kimmel doing blackface. Now, what about Dave Chappelle doing whiteface? Like, how is that? Like, what's the balance here? Like, in 20 years, are we going to say Dave Chappelle was wrong for doing whiteface? I mean, I can't imagine that's the case, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it, and I could be wrong, but I guess in my.
By the way, I love Dave Chappelle whiteface, by the way, just so everybody knows. I don't care.
Well, Chip.
yeah, it's so funny.
I do think there's a thing to be said where it's, which community is the marginalized one?
That makes sense.
You know, Dave Chappelle obviously in the news now for you know, going after other marginalized communities. And there's obviously much less forgiveness, I think, for those bits than Dave Chappelle making fun of a white person.
Yeah.
You know, to me, you know, someone like Dave Chappelle, a prominent black comedian in that marginalized community, them making fun of, you know, like a white person, for example, I almost see that in a way as punching up, you know what I mean? Now again, depending on, I guess, the nature of the joke, you know, but I think, I don't know. Because his bits, I don't think were, well, no, but it was whiteface. So, I don't know. It's an interesting thing, right?
Although, like, the best Chappelle bit, like, sketch ever is Clayton Bigsby. I don't care what anyone says. Like, that is the ultimate one, where he's totally just destroying what, like, this racist ideology of, you're just blindly following something that you have no clue about. Right. And if somebody else took over this thing, your heads would explode. That was the whole joke. Like, I'm going to show you that what you believe is ridiculous, and that I could subvert all of you and then make fun of it, right? And so that was the whole point. I love that. That's why that sketch is probably the most classic Chappelle.
Yeah.
I mean, some people might say player Heritage Ball, maybe, I don't know, or something like that.
The racial draft.
Was the next one too.
Pretty darn good, but I mean, that one, I think, Clayton Bigsby, that was like episode one, right?
That was episode one. Yeah.
Jump.
But that's, so good.
Yeah. Bit of trivia. Do you remember not only episode one, but sketch number one, the very first sketch that aired? Do you remember which one it was?
I
was kind of a throwaway sketch, but it was a pretty funny one. Do you remember what it was?
I only couldn't tell you the first episode for a sketch of Key and Peele.
Oh, okay.
I could not. I don't know. I bet if you said something about it, I probably would remember. What was this? Is it this? No, that's not this. That's Key and Peele. That's Sleeper.
I'll give you a hint. Girl dancing in the front seat. Well, I guess that's kind of the bit, but do you remember it?
No.
He was making fun of those old Mitsubishi Eclipse commercials.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it was just hilarious. And he had the the white girl in the front popping and locking to whatever like techno hip hop house song. And he was just sitting there like, ugh. And then, yeah, it's just the whole bit. And then he gets, you know, black girl there. He's listening to his rap music. She's, you know, just obviously over the top, but I don't know. It was a hilarious bit, and it like completely set, like, I don't know. It was just fun fact, fun aside. But yeah, that was the first sketch, was the Mitsubishi one.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
And it wasn't even one of the bigger famous ones, yeah.
No. The Wayne Brady one is one of my other favorite ones that he did. Wayne Brady is like Wayne Brady's a pimp and stuff.
Of course, the Charlie Murphy ones. Yeah.
Charlie Murphy's are great. And that's the thing, is that opened the door to Key and Peele, which then they got to do a bunch of stuff like that. They also did Whiteface, and then, you know, you watch White Girls of the, right. And I think those are funny, but I always wonder, like, what happened, like, it's almost like a 10-year shift of what is okay, what's not okay. It's weird, and that's why, and not that I say, like, that's why I'm a clean comedian, but it's a easy way to be a clean comedian, so you don't ever have to worry about, like, really towing any lines, like, you're like, because if I make jokes about my family, that's my family. 10 years, someone's gonna get mad at me about me joking about my family. Come on now, like, you can't, there's no way you can even do that. It's just, yeah, like, yeah, it's super funny. Do you know the first Key and Peele sketch?
That I don't.
It was I said B word to Mike.
That was sketch, that was number
first
one?
Sketch number one, first sketch.
Yeah, they came out hot, man. They came out swinging.
That's one of the best sketches.
Oh, I ever. Still to this day, like, quote that, like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, my wife and I would make fun of that all the time. Like, we think it's hilarious because it's not that technical phrase, but it's like people will say things to other people that they wouldn't say in front of their spouse because, you know, whatever.
No, and I just love the bravado, you know. Yeah. But like, of course, it's like, let's be real, man. We know our wives run the household. Yeah, you know? Yeah. But, you know, like, I'm in here, and, you know, just, yeah, it would literally be like if we're sitting here and being like, man, my wife, she, you know, whatever, and it's just like, oh, but. But you said it though, right?
But you said it. You say it, right? I love that. And that's the thing.
Like, in space.
In space is the best one. That's the one I was like, yeah, that's for real. Like, you would, like, even when they were like way out in the middle of everywhere and they were in the tree together and they're just like looking around and there's like,
yeah.
It's so funny. Game. So, of comedians that you feel have changed comedy, better or worse, it could be either way. Who would be, like, let's do one for, let's just say who you think has helped comedy the most that you could think of, or has actually changed comedy for the better, in your opinion?
Boy, that's a tough one on the spot.
I will say, I think Jerry Seinfeld. And the reason I say that is because he proved to everybody that you could take a stand-up set and you could turn it into something else, something beyond stand-up, right? And his stand-up, and then you got all the rip-offs, right? I think we talked about this before. You got all the rip-off people. It was like, what's the deal with airplane food?
Of course.
And they became happy. Yeah. But he showed that comedy is about taking notice of something and picking it apart and breaking it down and making fun of it in all its ways, right? You know, he would have probably been the first one to come up with, like, why do they call a driveway why do you park in a driveway and drive in a parkway? What's the deal with that? You know, like that kind of thing. Like, I'm a terrible Seinfeld, by the way.
You got to get the names on. You got to get the little like twinge, the little like, the fake outrage, you know. But I mean, because obviously this being Clean Comedy Podcast, you know what I mean? Like, I think somebody like a Jeff Foxworthy.
Yeah.
Not necessarily my cup of tea. Like, he's not my style comedian, but I think he was so like different from other acts. Like, he doing the whole redneck bit, you know? And it was just very different. And I think it really opened the door for people that are like, oh, I can be in my lane and still be very funny. Like, I don't have to try to be, you know, some type of comic or whatever it is. And, you know, I've talked a lot about Jim Gaffigan and just like how I think he's so fantastic. And I love that, like, you know, him and his wife, like, write the jokes together, you know, like it's, so it's always like sort of about his family, but never like putting them down. Like, it's always kind of like, it's signed off. The family approves of these jokes. But again, it's clean comedy, right? It's just like, you don't have to be, you know, a vulgar comic, or you don't have to be like, I don't know. He's a doughy, you know, a self-proclaimed doughy, pale, plain, you know, whatever. He's like, yeah, but I'm just really funny. And like, I don't know. I really appreciate what, you know, the two of them, I think, do as well. Right. Just kind of being so unique and so specific, but still really attracting a huge number of people, you know?
Yeah.
It's cool.
We don't have catchphrase comedians very much anymore. Like, Rodney Dangerfield used to do that too. Like, I can't get no respect, you know, like, pull his collar and do all this stuff. Yeah. And then, you know, Jeff Foxworthy, and then Bill Engvall had the Here's Your Sign. And then you have Larry the Cable Guy, like, Get Her Done. Like, those were things that were happening for a while where people were having catchphrase comedians.
Yeah.
And then they kind of died off, like, which is very interesting to me. I always assumed that. Maybe it was a younger thing. I always thought, like, oh, if I could just get a cool, funny catchphrase, like, that's it. Like, you could ride the wave for forever, you know?
I mean, you mentioned Larry the Cable Guy. I mean, that was his – I mean, I'm sure you know this, right? But, like, that's not his real voice, and that is not his shtick, you know? Like, he was just a guy that was trying to be a regular old stand-up, and it didn't work. And then all of a sudden, instead of talking like this, he started talking like this, and he started saying his funny words. Yeah, exactly. And all of a sudden, again, it's
character.
It's a character. It's a persona. But to your point, it's a catchphrase. And man, he rode the hell out of that wave. You almost got to give him credit, you know?
He still does commercials. Like, he made movies off of that character. Like, it's like Ernest P. World, you know? Like, that guy was everywhere for a while. Like, super funny. Or Pee Wee Herman, which, man, that ruined my childhood. Thanks a lot, Pee Wee. But yeah, you know.
Story Jones!
I used to be able to do that all the time. I would run around my house like, you know, like, that was a thing. Like, and we also don't see a lot of character comedians anymore. And I kind of would like to see a resurgence of that. I don't know if that's something that would actually work nowadays, but I would love to see that. I've always wanted to create a character, just do my own stand-up, and then also do a set as a character comedian. Like, and not Andy Kaufman-esque, but in that realm of, like, a character that subverts people's ideas.
I think what's hard about that now is there's such a demand for authenticity now.
Yeah.
Where if you're doing a character, it may not even be like problematic per se, but it's just kind of like, it wouldn't stick as much. Yeah. Like, I've actually thought about this. I talked about my mom in previous podcasts and how I just thought she was just the funniest person to, like, mimic. And I definitely thought of, like, doing more bits and more things like as her, in that, like, not just doing her voice, but like reacting to something as her, you know. So I've definitely thought of it as well, you know. But yeah, I just think the way things are going today, it's just like, I don't know, people are like, I want to know about you. Like, I don't know, what's your story, comedian? Authenticity is the biggest capital right now.
But also, I mean, things are cyclical. Like, things, like, do come back. Like, we had, like, George Carlin started off as the hippy dippy weatherman, right? Like, that's what he started off as, and then he went to whatever. And then, you know, as much as we love Rodney Dangerfield, he wasn't good when he started. Like, he dropped out, sold Siding, came back, started becoming Rodney Dangerfield, and then blew up. You know, like I said, you know, Larry the Cable Guy or whatever. And I think there's that. I think maybe 5 to 10 years from now, we'll see another one of those kind of people come back. I would love to see that. I want to see something like that, because it's unique now because of authenticity. It is unique to have somebody that's not authentic come and do something, which might be a way of people to go, oh, this is interesting. This is new. This is whatever.
Yeah. You
know, I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to predict in the next 5 to 10 years, we will have a mainstream comedian that is not authentic, that is a character comedian that does well. I'm not talking like Piff the Magic Dragon, which I love that guy, by the way. He's cool. Or somebody like that. I'm talking like we're getting another, another Leo the Cable Guy, another, Roddy Dangerfield, another Hippy Dippy Weatherman, something like that. And I know on YouTube those do exist, right? Like, I get that part. But I'm talking about an actual stand-up comedian.
Yeah. Could you argue that, like, mean comics, like an Anthony Jeselnik, could you argue they're,
you know it's a character, but he can sell it because you think that's who he really is. So it still feels authentic, even though he's lying to you. Now, Jeselnik is one of my all-time favorites, too, because... Just like Daniel Tosh. Those are two of my favorites because they're not my style. I can appreciate them so much more because they are mean, right? But Jeselnik, see, part of his why he works is he's letting you know that that you're in on the bit, and he knows that you're in on the bit. That's why I can get away with saying the things that I'm saying, because you know that it's not real, and I know it's not real, and everyone in this room knows it's not real. Everyone watching, listening, we all know it's not real. I'm just saying whatever I can say to you to make you feel uncomfortable enough to laugh.
Yeah, that's it. He's very mean, but he's also very smart and like clever. Mm-hmm. And again, comedy is subjective. You enjoy Tosh. I'm not a huge Tosh fan because I think he's mean and kind of like common denominator. Like, I don't want to say lazy. That's not fair, but just like, I don't know. It's just like, all right,
lowest common denominator. I agree. Well, he does a lot of low hanging fruit jokes, but
which is like, all right,
he's like an offshoot of Jeselnik. He's like the generic brand of Jeselnik.
Jeselnik is just. I mean, some stuff you're like, oh my god, can you even say that on TV? But again, it's the fact that they're incredibly well written jokes, Yeah, and you're kind of in on the bit, It's like he's doing it with a twinkle in his eye,
That's the thing, right? He's likable even when he's saying the worst stuff possible. Wow, I like you still. Like, I should be friends with you. Like, that's how you feel, even though you're like, oh my gosh, you should not be saying this. Actually, it's like your friend who does, like, at least when I was growing up, I had, like, this one friend that would always say terrible things, and I'm like, dude, you can't say stuff like that, like, around anybody. Like, that's not okay. But like, you would still laugh because you're like, well, he's my friend, it's funny, whatever. But you're like, part of you is like, dude, don't say that. But then the other part of you is like, yeah, say it, I want to hear what you're gonna say now.
That's our idiot,
All right, well, thank you. I'm glad we talked about comedy. That's the thing, is like, comedy, if you get anything from this, remember, words have meaning, and that's the point of being a comedian, is your words have to have a meaning, but the meaning should be to make people laugh, not to hurt anybody, not to punch down, not to ostracize people, not to any of those things. Don't go on the internet, and if you're gonna go and give someone feedback, give them that constructive criticism sandwich of something nice, something mean but constructive, and something nice again, right? If we could just do that, like, we want to build a community. That's the whole point of comedy, is we are already the outcasts, right? We're the jesters of the world. Like, people already kind of look down on us a little bit. Like, you think you can make money telling jokes? Remember that teacher that told you that? You think you're funny, you're a wise guy, you'll be able to make money with jokes? Sure. Yes, I do. And now you are. Yeah.
Someday.
Yeah. So don't beat down on people who are trying to live your same dream. Let's all lift each other up, because here's the thing. Right? It's what the high tide lifts all boats. That's the truth.
Love that.
Right? Yep. If we all help each other, we're going to get better. And then we can do collective, not that I'm saying we should do like unionize or whatever, but we can collectively raise up everything together by working together. I know there is a comedian that I spoke to that does want to unionize comedians. I think it's a great idea. There's not a protections for us. And a lot of what the work that we do is for free, unfortunately.
Gas money if you're lucky.
If you're lucky, and if you're not, you're doing the 8 hours that you spent refining that bit that you do for 5 minutes on stage, you get no money for, and you had to pay for gas and probably a drink and maybe parking and or Subway or whatever it was. And
all you got are those 5 minutes of exposure.
Of exposure. I hate that word.
Exactly. Quote unquote. Yeah. You're getting stage time. Yeah. Yeah. It's
at your club that you're making money off of me for,
Exactly. It's not a glamorous lifestyle. And to piggyback on what you're saying, about words mattering, it's like, look, man, if you did something that sucks, like, just own up to it and listen to the people that you're hurting and understand why you're hurting them. And, you know, like just meet somewhere in the middle and hey, we're all going to be fine, you know, like, but it's the people that are like, nah, man, I'm dying on this hill that like, okay, well now you just look like an idiot. Now this person still feels crappy. It's like, it's a lose-lose. Just, yeah. You know, just hear out the people, you know, that you may or may not be hurting with your words, you know,
yeah. Just use your words to make people laugh. That's all we're saying. That's it.
Yeah. We're comedians, man. Let's make people laugh.
We're clowns. We're the world's clowns. All right.
Oh, God.
Danny, where can people find you at?
You know, search my name. I mean, my name is Danny Howellini. You know, you can't miss me. So all the things, Instagram, Facebook, although most of that stuff is just my kids. So, you know, they're little cutie pies, but, you know, unofficial Disney Tonight Show podcast, obviously Clean Comedy Podcast. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Right. Check us out on YouTube, you know, subscribe, like, you know, obviously what we're doing here, Spotify, Okaizu, you know, life plug, okaizu.org. You know, feel free to donate there. Yeah, those are my things.
Perfect. You can go to jamesdcrevison.com. You can find us on YouTube under my same name, James D. Crevison. Don't forget to check out comedypreneur.com. I am working on new posts for it. I apologize. I know I'm behind. I've been working on a ton of projects. Some things that are hopefully going to come out in the next year or two. I apologize, guys. I really do. It's only me writing that thing. Now, that being said, I have thought about asking other comedians to submit blog posts, and I will give you credit for it. I have no problem putting your name on there. So if that's something that you're interested in and you want to, email me, jamesdcrevison@gmail.com. Email me a couple of ideas for blog posts. I can't pay you a ton of money. I apologize for that. I don't make a lot of money on that site. I make enough to pay for hosting every year. Right now it's growing. I'm sure if I did more, it would probably grow and I could pay more. And at some point, that's going to be my goal, is to employ more comedians and pay them a livable wage and all those things that I just said about raising the boats. So if you would like that, great. I understand if you're saying, James, exposure and $5 is not enough for me. I get it. 100%. I'm not mad at you.
Pay my internet gas money, James.
Yeah, I apologize. But I would love to. So if you want to, great. If you don't, cool. No worries. No harm, no foul. And then, you know, if I can, then I will play residuals and do whatever I can to help other people, because I'm all about helping. So thank you so much for listening. Danny, thank you so much for being my co-host. And everybody have a good week. Have a happy Halloweeny. And have a good one. Bye.